So, if authorities walked into your headquarters tomorrow morning
Right.
and they asked to see the, I guess, AI driver's licenses for your entire workforce, what would actually happen?
Honestly, probably a very uncomfortable silence, followed by just a frantic scramble. I mean, we're not talking about that generic corporate policy PDF that no one actually reads.
Right, the one you just scroll to the bottom of and click accept.
Exactly. The authorities want hard, defensible proof that every single employee using artificial intelligence is competent to do so.
Which is a terrifying thought for most executives listening to this. And, this isn't a hypothetical drill anymore. Today is June 5, 2026.
Which means time is basically up.
Yeah, we are less than 2 months away from August 2. That is the exact date national market surveillance authorities across Europe gain their formal enforcement powers for the EU AI Act. The runway is just gone.
It really is.
So for today's deep dive, we are looking at a stack of strategic documents. Specifically, we've got excerpts from the Geryon framework manuals and also the detailed EU AI Act audit metrics.
Yeah, dense stuff, but incredibly important.
Extremely. Because our mission today is to decode the organizational mechanics here. We want to unpack exactly what businesses are legally obligated to do right now and how the C-suite, how you, the executive listening to this, can actually build that defensible proof.
Without falling into what the documents call governance theater.
Yes. Let's talk about governance theater.
It's the trap so many companies are currently stuck in. They have this, well, this illusion of control, right?
Right.
Just because they bought an enterprise license for an AI tool and sent out a company-wide memo.
Right, they think they're covered.
But the core problem we are looking at today stems from how AI actually entered the workplace. I mean, it wasn't a structured IT rollout for most places.
No, it was totally organic.
Exactly. A marketing team started using a text generator to draft emails. An intern found some data crunching tool to speed up a spreadsheet. It just happened quietly from the bottom up.
Which brings us directly to Article 4 of the EU AI Act. Reading through these legal texts, there is a massive misconception out there.
Oh, a huge one.
People think the AI Act only targets developers, or it only applies to these massive sci-fi level high-risk systems in Annex 3.
Right.
But Article 4 casts a much wider net. It applies to practically every single organization using AI in any capacity.
Every single one.
Yeah. It legally requires businesses to use their best efforts to ensure a sufficient level of AI competence for all staff, and actually anyone acting on their behalf who handled AI systems.
And the key phrase in that mandate is best efforts based on their role, their technical knowledge, and the context of their use.
Right.
This introduces what the framework manuals call the Nachweislücke.
The evidence gap.
Exactly. For most organizations, meeting Article 4 isn't really a training problem. I mean, the employees probably know how to use the tools.
Yeah, the intern knows how to prompt the chatbot.
Right. It is entirely a documentation problem. The company possesses the knowledge, but they completely lack the formal mechanism to track who is responsible and who is formally trained.
It goes back to that fleet of company cars analogy.
Yes, that's a perfect way to look at it.
Like, your CEO might firmly believe every employee is a safe driver. But if the highway patrol pulls over a company van and the driver has no license, the company carries the liability.
Absolutely. The authorities do not care about your subjective belief in your team's competence.
They only care about the paper trail.
They only care about the paper trail. And the consequences of failing to produce that paper trail, they extend far beyond just regulatory
Oh,
fines.
for sure.
The strategic documents highlight a concept that executives really need to pay close attention to. They call it hectic costs.
Hectic costs. I love that term.
It's so accurate. When an audit hits, or worse, an AI-related incident occurs, say, an employee accidentally leaks proprietary data into an open source model.
Which happens all the time.
Exactly. The lack of documentation triggers instant operational paralysis.
Because the CTO is suddenly trying to figure out what systems are even online, the chief risk officer is having a heart attack because there's no paper trail, and you end up paying premium rates to outside consultants,
Okay.
working over a weekend to just reverse engineer 2 years of organic AI adoption.
It's an incredibly expensive way to discover you have zero visibility. And it creates this massive point of friction in the boardroom.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You have the CTO who wants to deploy AI rapidly, to maintain a competitive edge. And that is completely at odds with the CRO who wants to hit the brakes until the legal exposure is actually mapped out.
So, to resolve that tension, The C-suite needs a shared objective language.
Exactly.
And looking at the sources, that shared language is what they call the Organizational AI Readiness Score.
Yes.
The documents outline this deterministic framework to calculate the score on a scale from 0 to 100.
A very strict scale.
Right. And what caught my attention is how aggressively the math reflects the real world. I want to unpack the mechanics of this because it isn't just some simple average of who took a multiple choice quiz.
Not at all. The math is entirely risk weighted, which perfectly mirrors the core spirit of the EU AI Act itself.
Right, because the regulation doesn't treat a spam filter the same way it treats an AI system screening medical resumes.
Exactly. So your internal scoring shouldn't treat them equally either.
The framework categorizes AI usage into 5 levels. None, low, medium, high, and critical.
Mm-hmm.
And then it maps the operational risk across 4 levels. Low, moderate, high, and unacceptable.
Mm.
And the required competence scales up accordingly.
So give me an example of how that scales.
Well, say you are an intern doing basic grammar checks. The system only demands what they call awareness level evidence.
Makes sense.
But if you are the head of HR and you're using an algorithm to shortlist job candidates, the system demands responsible use documentation.
And here is where the brilliance of the engine lies. Mm-hmm. It uses this 3x multiplier.
Okay, what does that mean?
If an organization is missing competence evidence for that high-risk HR role, that specific gap damages the overall readiness score roughly 3 times as much as a gap for the low-risk intern.
Yeah. The algorithm aggressively penalizes your most dangerous blind spots. It forces the C-suite to actually look at the edge cases that carry the most liability.
Okay, but let's look at this from a skeptical perspective for a second.
Sure.
If a company is just self-reporting this data into some dashboard, what is stopping a mid-level manager from just fluffing the numbers?
Right, gaming the system.
Yeah. They could easily mark high-risk tools as low-risk just to generate a beautiful 90 out of 100 score to keep the board happy.
Well, that vulnerability is exactly why the framework separates the readiness score from what it calls the confidence level.
The confidence level.
Yeah. They sit side by side on the executive dashboard, but they measure 2 completely different things.
Okay, break that down for me.
So the readiness score measures the reported competence. The confidence level measures the data quality.
Ah, okay. So think of it like looking at a corporate financial statement. The readiness score is your reported quarterly profit. It looks fantastic on paper, but the confidence level is the independent auditor's stamp verifying that you didn't just invent those numbers out of thin air.
Right. If the data isn't fresh or if it's incomplete, the system flags it. Let's play that out.
Okay.
Say your organization claims a stellar readiness score of 95, but the system sees that the training certificates linked to your high-risk roles expired 6 months ago.
Oh, yikes.
Or it detects that half the departments in your company haven't even been mapped for AI usage yet.
Right.
The confidence level just plummets to low.
So an auditor walking in and seeing a 95 readiness score, but with a low confidence level, they aren't going to be impressed.
Not at all.
Yeah.
They were going to see a giant red flag indicating the company is engaged in that governance theater we talked about earlier. It renders the high score virtually useless.
It basically tells the authorities that your governance is a mirage.
Yep. To achieve a high confidence level, the system demands an unbroken chain of fresh, complete evidence.
So if a high confidence level relies entirely on the quality of the evidence, we need to look at what the auditor is actually searching for.
Yes, the pillars.
Right. The manuals outline 10 specific pillars of a defensible audit trail. And these are deterministic metrics, meaning it's binary.
Black and white.
Yeah. The data is either documented, partially documented, or missing. There is no room for estimating or guessing.
And those 10 pillars force a company to translate chaos into clarity. I mean, currently, a standard enterprise just has these scattered fragments of compliance.
Yeah. HR has an LMS completion record.
IT has a spreadsheet of approved software.
Legal has a signed PDF sitting on some local shared drive.
Exactly. The 10 pillars act as a forcing function to pull all those fragments into a single unified view.
Let's look at the mechanics on a few of these critical pillars. Because starting with pillar 2, documented role-based AI usage.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Right. Implementing this in a messy corporate IT environment is incredibly difficult because of shadow IT. You can't just ask department heads what AI they use because half the time they don't even know what their teams are.
Plugging into their browsers. Exactly. Implementing pillar 2 requires an active discovery process. It forces the organization to formally map out the reality of their operations
rather than just pointing to the theoretical IT policy.
You actually have to attach the specific AI system to the specific role using it.
Yes.
And that leads directly to Pillar 5, which is assigned ownership and responsibility. I find this one fascinating because it solves that classic corporate problem where, you know, when everyone is responsible, no one is responsible.
Oh, 100%. Imagine the marketing department is using this advanced image generation model.
Okay.
The chief marketing officer assumes IT owns the risk because, well, it's software.
Right.
The CIO assumes legal owns it because of copyright concerns with the images.
Yeah, of course.
And legal assumes the CMO owns it because it's their team actually using the tool.
So if an auditor reviews that process and sees no designated owner, you just fail the metric.
You fail. The deterministic framework forces the company to put a single accountable name into the box for every single AI use case.
The framework also tackles the reality that compliance is not a static achievement. Like, you don't just do it once.
No, it's ongoing.
Let's look at Pillar 9, an available unbroken audit trail, and how it interacts with the system's strict timeline logic. The evidence doesn't just sit in a binder on a shelf gathering dust.
No, it is categorized dynamically. The status tracking is really relentless.
How so?
Well, evidence is categorized as valid if it has no expiration or if it expires more than 30 days out.
Okay.
Expiring means it dies within the next 30 days. Expired is obvious. And pending applies to evidence lacking an issue date entirely.
That expiring category, that seems like the tactical sweet spot for management.
It absolutely is. It acts as an early warning radar.
Right, because it gives the C-suite a 30-day runway to tap an employee on the shoulder and say, hey, refresh the certification.
Yes, before a compliance gap actually opens up and damages the organization's readiness score.
So by tracking these 10 pillars dynamically, the C-suite transforms a subjective statement like, we think our people are trained.
Into objective reality.
Exactly. Here is the cryptographic log of exactly when they were trained, the specific policy they accepted, and the named executive who owns the risk.
But staring at a dashboard that highlights fragmented evidence or a low score, that doesn't actually solve the problem.
No, you need a plan.
Executives need to know what to do on a Monday morning when the board asks for a remediation strategy.
And the sources address this by introducing a rule engine called the Gap Center.
Yes, the Gap Center.
It is specifically designed to cut through decision paralysis.
Because an auditor expects to find gaps. Yeah. What they will not tolerate is a lack of active management.
Right.
The Gap Center runs a set of deterministic rules to flag exact vulnerabilities. It doesn't just say, fix your HR department.
Yeah, that's too vague.
It points to a specific failure.
Rule GR1, for instance, flags missing competence.
Right.
A role requires an advanced certificate based on its risk profile, and the employee in that role hasn't completed it. That's a straightforward fix.
But the rules get much more structural than that.
Mm.
Take GR5, missing policy acceptance.
Oh, this one is interesting.
Right. Mm. An employee might have passed the technical training with flying colors, but HR failed to have them digitally sign the updated acceptable use policy.
Which seems like a small admin error, but
from a legal standpoint, that is a massive vulnerability. The employee could claim they were never formally instructed on the company's ethical boundaries.
Or look at Rule GR8, which flags governance blind spots. This triggers when a role's risk level hasn't even been determined yet.
And you cannot manage a risk you haven't categorized.
Exactly. It forces the management team to stop ignoring the edge cases.
But the true executive value of the Gap Center comes from how it prioritizes these failures.
Prioritization is key.
Because in a large enterprise, an initial audit might return, I don't know, 5,000 individual gaps.
That volume of issues would just paralyze an operations team.
Utterly paralyze them. And this is where the concept of uplift comes into play.
Uplift. I love this part of the framework. It basically acts as an ROI calculator for your compliance budget, doesn't it?
It does. It doesn't hand you a depressing alphabetical laundry list of 5,000 problems. It prioritizes the fixes based on the estimated numerical improvement, the uplifts to your overall readiness score.
So it allows the C-suite to allocate resources with surgical precision.
Exactly. If the CRO only has the bandwidth to implement 5 fixes this week, the uplift metric reveals exactly which 5 actions will reduce the company's liability the most.
Let's put that in a boardroom scenario so people can visualize it.
Okay.
Say the HR director wants to spend the week chasing down 50 interns to complete a basic awareness quiz.
Sure.
The uplift calculator might reveal that fixing those 50 low-risk gaps only moves the readiness score by 2 points.
Right.
Meanwhile, finalizing the documentation for one single high-risk algorithmic trading role might generate a 10-point uplift.
Exactly. The executive team can instantly see that the interns can wait. The trading role is the immediate threat to the business.
That prioritization mechanism is what makes governance actionable. It shifts compliance from a frantic game of whack-a-mole
into a strategic deployment of resources.
Yes. However, we do have to pause here to deliver a vital reality check.
You do.
The strategic documentation we are reviewing is explicit about what this framework is and, more importantly, what it is not.
The legal disclaimer.
The critical legal disclaimer.
Yes. Even if your organization achieves a perfect 100 out of 100 readiness score.
Which would be amazing.
It would be. And accompanied by a high confidence level and a pristine dashboard. That does not constitute a legal compliance certification.
Right.
It is an internal organizational readiness signal. It absolutely cannot and does not replace the nuanced guidance of your internal legal counsel or specialized technology lawyers.
Now, I can imagine an executive hearing that and just throwing their hands up.
Oh, for sure.
Like, if running this massive deterministic framework and tracking 10 pillars of evidence doesn't legally guarantee compliance, why invest the capital and the operational bandwidth to do it?
Well, the investment is required because of the specific legal standards set by Article 4.
Right.
When the market surveillance authorities invoke their enforcement powers this August, they are not expecting flawless perfection from day one. They are explicitly looking for best efforts.
And best efforts is a notoriously vague legal term. I mean, how do you even quantify that?
You quantify it by building a defensible evidence path.
Yes.
Think about it. If an investigator sits across the table from a CEO,
okay,
and that CEO can produce a deterministically calculated, risk-weighted, dynamically updated audit trail showing exactly who uses AI, their documented risk levels, their active training certificates, and a prioritized gap closure plan driven by an uplift engine.
That is huge.
That is the literal physical manifestation of best efforts.
It fundamentally changes the dynamic of the conversation. Instead of the CEO sweating and saying, we're trying our best, we sent an email about AI safety.
Right.
The CEO slides a report across the table and says, here is the mathematical proof of our ongoing governance, and here is our prioritized roadmap for addressing our remaining vulnerabilities.
It's a shield. It is the difference between looking professionally diligent and grossly negligent.
Because flaws will always exist in a complex system.
Always.
The auditor's primary concern is whether you have an active, reliable mechanism to identify and manage those flaws. And the framework provides exactly that mechanism.
It really does.
So let's summarize the mission critical takeaways here for the listeners.
Let's do it.
The calendar is unforgiving. August 2, 2026 is the enforcement deadline. Article 4 of the EU AI Act demands actual documented proof of AI competence across your entire workforce.
Not just your specialized developer teams.
Right. Relying on organic technology adoption, scattered HR training logs, and vague unassigned responsibilities creates an evidence gap. And that gap simply will not survive an audit.
No, it won't.
You need a centralized, risk-weighted evidence path. You need to know your readiness score, you must secure the confidence level of the data behind that score, and you need a prioritized plan to close your governance gaps.
And as we wrap up, I want to leave everyone listening with a challenge. Something that builds on these documents, but looks slightly over the horizon.
Okay, I like it. What is it?
Every metric, policy acceptance, and risk weight we discussed today relies on one fundamental assumption.
Which is?
That the entity using the AI is a human being.
Oh, right.
We are proving the competence of biological employees using AI as a tool.
But the technology isn't staying in the tool phase. I mean, we are rapidly shifting toward autonomous AI agents.
Exactly. We are deploying synthetic employees.
Wow. Synthetic employees.
Systems designed to execute complex workflows, negotiate contracts, send emails, and make financial decisions on behalf of the company without a human ever intervening in the loop.
And the legal framework dictates that you must prove the competence of anyone acting on your behalf.
Right. So if the AI agent is acting independently to execute corporate strategy, the agent is effectively the employee.
Which begs the question, who takes the mandatory training?
Exactly. How does your organization document the competence and the policy acceptance of an autonomous script under future iterations of the EU AI Act?
That is wow.
The framework we unpack today is the mandatory baseline for surviving August 2026. But the definition of an organizational user is about to become exponentially more complicated.
It is a governance puzzle that every forward-thinking executive needs to start mapping out immediately.
Yesterday, really.
That is an incredibly complex and honestly somewhat unnerving frontier to consider. We will absolutely need to do a dedicated deep dive into the governance of synthetic employees in the future.
I'd love to.
But for today, thank you for joining us. For you executives listening, take a hard look at your internal systems. Think about that fleet of company cars and ask yourself if you truly know where the driver's licenses are.
Good luck out there.
Address your organization's evidence gaps before the authorities do it for you. We'll see you next time.